This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, watching commodities with my colleague, Simon Constable, writing for Barron's and the Wall Street Journal and other distinguished publications from the south of France, Occitane. And I check first with Simon about diesel. We've been watching this for several weeks. This is refined oil. Why in Occitane is this is an agrarian-based economy. The farmers need it for their farm equipment, especially their tractors. And there is the question of it being not available. You pull into a filling station, a forecourt, they call it in UK, and the sign says, no diesel. Simon, a very good day to you. We've watched your diesel prices. You drive diesel. And right now the question is, are you experiencing shortages? Because there's a report in the Wall Street Journal that there are shortages in Europe, no matter the price. Good day to you, Simon.
Good day to you, John. It's always great to be on the show, and always great to discuss diesel because it is a necessity here in Occitane. You know, a lot of farmers out there, a lot of farm trucks, tractors, all the rest of it, and the car that I drive as well. I have not experienced a shortage personally. I have heard of some other people having shortages and arriving at the gas station and then being told, sorry, we don't have any, or the person in front of them gets all of it and there's none left. I've not experienced that. However, the price does vary quite a bit depending on where you buy it. So where I am is quite rural, and quite often that can mean over $2 a liter. That's about two pints, so a quarter of a gallon there. And more broadly in France, it's around about a little less than €2 a liter.
So we're talking about a price that is steep, but the shortages you don't see in Occitane. So let's move in then to the general story of energy. Right now, we're weeks away from the price cap imposed by the European powers and the United States on oil, Russian oil, cutting off Russian oil by sea to all of the European Union, but also putting a cap on Russian oil sold to anyone else in the world. Right now, oil is around $90 a barrel, and that is the same as it's been the last week. So we will wait to see if it spikes. There's an article in Barron's by one of your colleagues writing that there are oil speculators who believe it could get to $200 a barrel by March of 23. It's now about in the 90s, 97, 95. $200 a barrel, which would seize up the world's economy. Natural gas also is flatlining as to what it's been. So there does not seem to be a crisis right now in energy demand in Europe. Is that how you're experiencing it, Simon? You watch London as well as the rest of the continent.
Yeah, I don't think there's a crisis here. What's really interesting to me, and it's worth remembering this, is that the oil market is a closed market in terms of there's one market and it's the globe. So if we're not buying Russian oil, someone else is. And we know already that India and China and Turkey are buying a lot of Russian oil. And whatever price they're paying, it doesn't really matter to us in the oil market. What matters is that if they're buying from Russia, they're not buying from the other people that we can buy from. So if you look at the price of oil now that you'd mentioned, it's similar to what it was right before Russia invaded Ukraine. So, which indicates that Russia's oil is still getting onto the market globally, and the demand, you know, the demand for it is just being, you know, satiated by other suppliers. So maybe Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that aren't Russia. So I think that's something to remember there, and I don't see how that will change. You know, if there are sanctions on Russia, Russia will just sell it to other people at a lower and lower and lower and lower price. That's fine. They need the money. I say it's fine, but, you know, obviously morally there are problems. with that. But in terms of the markets are amoral. They will price it according to what you can get and what the supply and demand is. And I don't see that changing.
Let's look to the future. During COP27 these last weeks, there's been much anxiety about the temperature and the change of the climate over these next years, decades, and the balance of the century. An article in Barron's where you write, and your remarks since COP26 in Glasgow, a year past, November of 21, suggest counterintuitively that the big oil companies, Exxon and BP, are mentioned, but we've talked about other companies prospering in this environment. Those big oil companies are likely to be the ones who prosper the most with green energy. Explain that, Simon.
Yes, I think this is one of the biggest ironies out there. Green energy will be introduced to us by the same people that have been selling us fossil fuels for, you know, a long time, for, you know, well over a century in some cases. Why is that? Well, one is they're in an existential crisis. They got to sell something different and they do know energy. So sooner or later, we won't be using fossil fuels. That, I think, is the goal of many governments around the world now. So these Exxon and BP and all the rest of them face an existential crisis. They know it. They got to do something. They are doing something. They have gobs of cash. They make a lot of money. They're doing very, very well. And they're using that to get into the green business. Some have been doing this for quite a while, and they're going to be able to implement it. Now, these companies are enormous, and they know how to do logistics. They know how to implement new products and bring it to the market successfully and to advertise it and make sure it works. And that's a really hard thing to beat. A startup won't be able to beat this. They really have the advantage, the upper hand in this. And we will continue to hear of Exxon and BP and Shell and, you know, all the rest of it, Total and all of them. They will continue to be there even if they change their names. So, you know, we won't be getting rid of the same companies that have been there all along.
Simon, commodities in general also include the soft commodities, and there is concern at COP27 and also at NATO and the EU of food security, especially for the global south, depending upon the shipments out of the Black Sea Basin, out of Russia. But in general, food is more expensive than it was. That's worldwide inflation. Checking on inflation of food since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, the crisis. Wheat and corn and soybean, have they changed profoundly in these last months?
Well, that's really interesting. Let's start with wheat. It's $8 a bushel, approximately, and just before the war in Ukraine, it was $8 a bushel, and we're seeing something slightly different with corn. That's significantly higher. That was around about $6 a bushel, and then recently it was around about $6.50 a bushel. So it's up somewhat, but it isn't near as high as it was during the height of the war. What you've got to remember when looking at these things, and then the soybeans as well, which show a similar story, before and after the invasion, it sort of stabilized to $14 a bushel. And we look at that. But when you buy bread or food, a big cost of that, you know, the bread or the food or the corn chips is fuel. It's diesel fuel that is used to run trucks to get it to you, because that stuff is processed and then manufactured. So bread is made in a bakery, you know, and you need the electricity there, and then you put it on a truck, and the truck comes to the shop, and then you go to the shop and buy it. They've got to bake in all of that diesel cost, which is a big cost when you're taking big trucks a lot of places, a lot of days. So it is interesting. It is stabilizing. I am not so worried about that, because I think the higher the prices go, and they're not low prices, these, then the more farmers will produce, and that will be very good for us all.
All right. Checking on the start of the winter. I've talked to Berlin, I've talked to London, and I've talked to Rome in the last week since we spoke. Now, you're in provincial France, and you enjoy the Mediterranean climate. So balmy is not news in Occitane. However, what is striking is a mild start to the heating season in London, same in Berlin, same in Rome. These are promising moments that the weather gods are being good to Europe because the gas storage is high. Do you see, in our final minute, Simon, do you see anxiety in the French reporting about energy, or is France feeling confident given how much of its electricity comes from nuclear energy? We have less than a minute.
I think France feels very, very confident about this. France knows how to run energy very well. It does have a lot of nuclear power. There is a lot of gas in storage. There is a lot of way to get more gas if they need it from Africa, bringing in liquefied natural gas. I think it's going to be fine. I mean, I don't think there's ever really been, certainly in the last few decades, and a natural gas or a heating crisis in France. So I think we are going to be fine. In my area, it's a little bit different. I think it's going to be even finer because most people use wood-burning stoves to heat their homes. And that will be fine because people just have to go outdoors and chop down a tree, presuming that it's their tree to chop down. So I think that's going to be quite good. And people will stay toasty warm if it gets cold.
All right,
and
Simon,
it isn't yet.
Simon Constable with an axe on his shoulder as he leaves us back to Occitane, France. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.